Chapter 13. Seconds before he slipped below the surface, however, Austin's one-way trip to Davy Jones' locker was cut short. A hand reached over the side of the launch and grabbed him by the hair. His teeth clacked like a pair of castanets, and his scalp felt as if it were being pulled out by the roots. Then other hands were grabbing him by the armpits and collar, and he was hauled from the sea, sputtering and coughing like a kitten in a well. His legs were still dangling in the water when the motor launch took off and raced over the waves with a roar of jet propulsion engines, its bow high in the air. Through blurred vision, Austin saw, to his surprise, that they were swinging alongside the blue yacht. Semi-conscious, he was passed up to the deck and carried to what must be the sick bay, where he was relieved of his soggy clothes, wrapped in warm towels, and examined by a frowning man with a stethoscope. Then he was thrust into a sauna, where eventually he could move his fingers and toes. He was examined a second time and given a blue fleece sweatsuit to wear. Apparently, he was going to live. His transition from near death to near life was accomplished under the watchful eye of two men, built like professional wrestlers, who spoke to each other in Spanish. The same guard dogs escorted him as he walked on rubber legs to a luxurious stateroom. They settled him into a comfortable reclining chair, covered him with a soft blanket, and left him to rest. Austin fell into an exhausted sleep. When he awakened, he saw that he was under scrutiny by a pair of dark eyes. A man sat in an armchair, watching him from a few feet away as if he were a specimen on a lab slide. The man grinned when he saw Austin's eyelids flutter. "Good. You're awake," he said. His voice was deep and resonant, and he spoke American English with only a hint of an accent. The man reached over to a side table for a silver-plated flask and poured Austin a drink. With shaking fingers, Austin swirled the greenish-yellow-amber liquid around in the bottom of the brandy snifter, breathed in the heavy fumes, and took a deep sip. The fiery herbal liquor trickled down his throat, and its warmth spread throughout his body. Austin glanced at the flask. "This tastes too good to be antifreeze, but the effect is the same." The man chuckled and took a swig from the flask. "Green Izara is 100 proof, he said, wiping his mouth with the back of his hand. "It's usually served in glasses hardly bigger than your thumb. We thought a little extra might be of benefit in your case. How is your wound?" Austin's hand reached down and touched his ribs. He could feel the stiffness of a bandage under his shirt, but there was no pain, even when he pressed with his fingers. He remembered the flash of white as the ivory knife slashed his flesh. "How bad was it?" "Another half inch deeper, and we would have been burying you at sea." The grim assessment was accompanied by a grin. "It feels okay." "My ship's doctor is an expert in treating trauma. He sewed you up and froze the wound." Austin glanced around at his surroundings, his memories returning. "Ship's doctor? This is the blue yacht, isn't it?"
"That's right. My name is Baltazar Aguirre's. This is my boat."
With his barrel chest and large hands, Aguirre's looked more like a longshoreman than the owner of a yacht that was probably worth several $1 million. He had a broad forehead and thick black eyebrows over a strong nose, a wide mouth that curved upward in a natural grin, and a chin like a granite ledge. His eyes were the purple-black of ripe olives. He wore a light blue sweatsuit identical to the one on loan to Austin. A black beret was perched at a jaunty angle on his thick pepper-and-salt hair.
"Pleased to meet you, Mr. Aguirre's. My name is Kurt Austin. Thanks for your hospitality."
Aguirre's extended his hand in a bone-crunching grip.
"Think nothing of it, Mr. Austin. We like to entertain guests."
His dark eyes danced with amusement.
"Most arrive on board in a more conventional manner, however. May I pour you another Izara?"
Austin waved it off. He wanted to keep a clear head.
"Perhaps after you have some food." Are you hungry? Austin had worked up an appetite since the bread and cheese he'd eaten for brunch. Yes, now that you mention it. I wouldn't mind a sandwich. I would be a poor host if I could not do better than a sandwich. If you feel well enough, I'd like you to join me for a light meal in the salon. Austin levered himself out of the chair and stood somewhat shakily. I'll be fine. Aguirre said, splendid. I'll give you a few minutes. Come when you're ready. He rose and left the cabin. Austin stared at the closed door and shook his head. His brain still felt waterlogged. He was weak from blood loss. He went into the bathroom and looked in the mirror. He looked like a commercial for ghoul makeup. Not surprising after being stabbed, shot at, and blown out of the water. He washed his face with cold, then hot water. Noticing an electric shaver, he removed the stubble on his chin. When he stepped back into the stateroom, he saw he had company. The tough-faced stewards who had escorted him earlier were waiting. One opened the door and led the way while the other man took up the rear. The walk gave Austin ample opportunity to exercise, and he felt his legs grow stronger with every step. They came to the main deck salon, and one of the men motioned for Austin to enter. Then he and the other man left him alone. Austin stepped into the salon and raised his eyebrows. He had been on dozens of yachts and had found the decor to be similar. Chrome and leather and clean contemporary lines were the norm, but the Navarra's salon resembled the interior of a southern European farmhouse. The eggshell white walls and ceiling were of stucco, inlaid with rough-hewn beams. The floor was a red tile. A fire was crackling in a large stone fireplace that had been built into one wall. Over the mantel was a painting of men playing a game Austin recognized as Hylai. He went up to a still-life painting of assorted fruit and was examining the signature when a deep voice said, "Interested in art, Mr. Austin?" Aguirre's had come up from behind without making a sound. Austin said, "I collect dueling pistols, which I think of as a form of art." "Without question. Deadly art is still art. I picked up that Cézanne for my little collection last year. The other pieces I found at auction or acquired from private sources." Austin strolled past the Gauguins, Degas, Manets, and Monets. The little collection was more extensive than that found in many museums. He moved to another wall that was covered with large photographs. "These are originals, too?" "A few of my holdings," Aguirre said with a shrug. "Shipbuilding yards, steel mills, and so forth." He sounded like a jaded waiter rattling off items on a menu. "But enough of business." He took Austin by the arm. "Dinner is ready." He led the way through sliding doors into an elegant dining room. At the center of the room was an oval mahogany table set for 12. Aguirre removed his beret and, with a snap of his wrist and great accuracy, flung it to a chair across the room. He gestured grandly toward the two opposite chairs at one end of the table. As the two men took their seats, a waiter appeared from nowhere and poured their tall goblets full of wine. "I think you will like this sturdy Spanish Rioja," Aguirre said. He raised his glass. "To art. To the master and crew of the Navarra." "You are very gracious," Aguirre said, with obvious approval. "Ah, good," he said, his eyes lighting up. "I see that our feast is about to begin." There were no appetizers, and they dug right into the main course, a hearty bean, pepper, and pork rib dish served with cabbage. Austin complimented the chef and asked what the dish was. "This is called Alubias de Tolosa," Aguirre said, downing his food with gusto. "We Basques treat it with an almost mystical reverence." "Basque. Of course. Navarra is a Basque province. Then there's the Hylai painting and the Black Beret." I'm impressed, Mr. Austin. You seem to know a great deal about my people. Anyone interested in the sea knows that the Basques were the greatest explorers, sailors, and shipbuilders in the world. Aguirre's clapped his hands. Bravo! He refilled Austin's wine glass and leaned forward. Tell me, what is your interest in the sea? He maintained his ferocious grin but pinioned Austin with a penetrating gaze. Austin admired the way Aguirre's had subtly managed the conversational shift, until he knew his host better and learned why the blue yacht was hanging out near the Oceanus fish farm. Austin planned to play his cards close to his vest. I'm a salvage specialist, he said. I've been working on a project in the Faroes. I came to Skalishaun to do fishing. Aguirre sat back and roared with laughter. Excuse my bad manners, he said with tears in his eyes. But it was my men who fished you from the sea. Austin's mouth widened in a sheepish grin. A cold swim wasn't in my plans. Aguirre's became serious again. From what we saw, there was an explosion on your boat. The ventilation for the engine compartment was insufficient, and gasoline vapors collected. It happens sometimes within boards, Austin said. Aguirre's nodded. Strange. In my experience, explosions of that type usually happen when a boat has been sitting at the dock. And your wound undoubtedly was caused by flying metal. Undoubtedly, Austin said with a poker face, knowing full well that the ship's doctor would have seen that there were no burn marks on his skin, and his wound was too neat to be from a jagged hunk of metal. Austin didn't know why Aguirre's was playing verbal cat and mouse, but he went along with the game. I was lucky you were nearby. Nodding soberly, Aguirre's said, We watched your earlier encounter with the patrol boat and saw you head along the coast. When we rounded the point later, you had vanished. Not long after that, you burst from that sea cave like a man shot from a cannon. He clapped his big hands together. Boom! Your boat was in pieces and you were in the water. That about sums it up, Austin said with a faint smile. After offering Austin a short, thick cigar, which he refused, Aguirre's lit up a dark stogie that smelled like a toxic waste site. So, my friend, he said, blowing smoke through his nostrils. Did you get into the caves? Caves? Austin feigned innocence. For God's sake, man, that's why I'm here, to find the caves. Surely you must have wondered what my boat is doing in this godforsaken place. It had occurred to me. Then allow me to explain. I have done very well with my businesses. An understatement. You're very fortunate. Congratulations. Thank you. My wealth gives me the means and the time to do whatever I like. Some men choose to spend their fortune on beautiful young women. I choose to be an amateur archaeologist. Ambitious hobbies in either case. I still enjoy the company of beautiful women, especially if they are intelligent. But with me, the past is more than a hobby. He looked as if he were about to spring from his chair. It is my passion. As you said earlier, the Basques were great men of the sea. They pioneered the cod and whale fisheries off North America decades before Columbus. An ancestor of mine, Diego Aguirre's, profited from this trade. He would be proud to see his descendant has carried on his legacy. You're more than kind, Mr. Austin. He was a man of great courage and unyielding principle, qualities that got him in trouble with the Spanish Inquisition. He angered one of the more ruthless inquisitors. Then he was executed? Aguirre smiled. He was resourceful as well. Diego saw his wife and children to safety. I am a direct descendant of his eldest son. Family tradition says he escaped in one of his ships, but his fate is a mystery. The sea is full of unsolved puzzles. Aguirre nodded. Nevertheless, he left tantalizing clues that show he intended to put himself far beyond the reach of the Inquisition. The traditional North American route for the Basques included a stopover here in the Faroes. So I began to explore that link.
You know the origins of the name Skalsham?
I've been told it means Skull Harbor. Aguirre smiled and rose from the table to extract an ornately carved wooden box from a cabinet. He unlatched the top and pulled out a skull, cradling it in one hand, like Hamlet contemplating Yorick.
This is from one of those caves. I've had it looked at by experts. It has distinct Basque characteristics.
He tossed the skull to Austin as if it were a ball, probably hoping to shock him. Austin caught the skull neatly and spun it in his hand like a geographer studying a globe of the world.
Maybe it's your ancestor, Diego.
He tossed the skull back.
I wondered the same thing and had it tested for DNA. This gentleman and I are not related, I'm sad to say.
Aguirre put the skull back into the box and rejoined Austin at the table.
This is my second visit here. The first time I expected that the caves would be accessible from land. I was dismayed to learn that the harbor and cave area had been purchased for use as a fish farm. I located a man who had worked in demolition when the farm was set up. He said that when the owners were blasting out rock to create storage space, they broke through to the caves. I tried to persuade the owners to let me conduct archaeological explorations, but they refused. I pulled every string I could think of, but even with my connections, Oceanus wouldn't budge. So I came back for another look.
You're very persistent.
This has become a quest, which is why I'm interested in your adventure. I suspected the natural arch might provide entry into the caves, but the waters around them were too dangerous for our launches. Apparently, you found a way to get in.
Dumb luck, Austin said briefly. Aguirre chuckled.
I think it was more than luck. Please. Tell me what you saw. I will bribe you with more wine.
He snapped his fingers. The waiter brought a new bottle, opened it, and refilled their glasses. No bribe is necessary, Austin said. Consider it partial repayment for your hospitality and the fine meal. He sipped from his glass, enjoying the buildup of suspense. You're right, there is a way into the caves through the arch. The locals call it the Mermaid's Gate. The cave network is quite extensive. I only saw part of it. Austin went into detail about the cave art, saying nothing about his side trip into the fish farm. Aguirre hung on every word.
Similar Paleolithic paintings dating back 12,000 years have been found on the walls of caves in Basque country, he murmured at one point. The other drawings indicate that an advanced civilization must have used the caves.
That was my impression. Supposedly the Faroes were uninhabited before the Irish monks and the Vikings settled here.
Maybe the historians were wrong. I wouldn't be surprised. The scholars have no idea where my people came from. Our language has no antecedents in Europe or Asia. Basques have the highest percentage of Rh-negative blood type in the world, leading some to speculate that we go directly back to Cro-Magnon man. He banged his fist lightly on the table. I'd give anything to get into those caves. You saw the warm reception I got. You seem to have stirred up a hornet's nest. While you slept, the patrol boats came out from shore and demanded permission to come aboard. We refused, of course. The boat I saw had a couple of men with automatic rifles. Aguirre's waved toward the art hanging on the wall. When they saw my men outgunned and outnumbered them, they quickly left. They had a helicopter, too. It was armed with rockets. Oh, yes, that, he said, as if he were talking about a pesky gnat. I had my men brandish their handheld surface-to-air missiles, and the helicopter stopped bothering us. Missiles and automatic weapons. The Navara was armed like a warship. Aguirre's read Austin's mind. Wealthy men can be a target for kidnappers. The Navara would be fair game for pirates, so I have made sure it is not exactly toothless. Of necessity, I have surrounded myself with loyal and well-armed men. Why do you suppose Oceanus is so prickly about people poking into its business? Austin said. We're talking about a fish farm, not diamond mines. I asked myself the same question, Aguirre said with a shrug. One of the men who had kept watch over Austin came into the dining room. He handed Aguirre's a plastic bag and whispered into his ear. Aguirre nodded and said, Thank you for being so forthcoming about your visit to the caves, Mr. Austin. Is there anything more I can do for you? I wouldn't mind a lift back to the village. Done. My man has informed me that we are passing the sea stack and should be anchoring in a few minutes. He handed the plastic bag over. Your clothes and personal effects have been drying out. Austin was ushered back to his cabin so he could change. The bag also held his wallet, which contained his Numa photo ID card prominently displayed in its plastic window. Aguirre's was a cool one. He would have known that Austin's story about being in marine salvage was made out of whole cloth, yet he'd never let on. Inside the bag was a business card with his host's name and a telephone number. Austin tucked the card into his wallet. Aguirre's was waiting on deck to say goodbye. I appreciate your hospitality, Austin said, shaking hands with his host. I hope I'm not being rude, having to eat and run. Not at all, Aguirre's said, with an enigmatic smile. I wouldn't be surprised if our paths crossed again. Stranger things have happened, Austin said with a grin. Moments later, Austin was in the launch, heading across the quiet harbor.